Hello and welcome to Cruise Club. We've got the need to podcast. This is episode one, Endless Love from 1981. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
Mike, we are here. This is a new podcast. We previewed it on our intro episode. We're doing the Tom Tom Clubs, alternating every Friday. This starts off the Tom Tom Club with a Tom Cruise movie. Next week, we will have He Knows You're Alone starring Tom Hanks. Two separate podcasts, two separate feeds, but in spirit, kind of the same. We will be comparing the two, have a game that compares the two actors. But here we are, new year, new you, new me, new actor to cover. Boy, oh boy, what a movie.
Oh my God. Before we get into it yet, I just want to say, like, I am so excited for this Tom Tom Club project that we're doing here. Because, like you said, two separate feeds, technically two separate podcasts, but one collective project, I think, that we're trying to do here. And it's kind of new, but I think it's adding a little bit of extra fun to everything. And oh my God, I don't think I've, like, not since Cage, right? Like, not since that Crispin Glover, Nick Cage TV pilot have we kicked off a podcast this good, I think, like, with something this strong. Like, this was some crazy stuff to watch.
So now, did you know, I don't know how much, I never actually know how much research you do about a movie going into a movie or going into a podcast. Did you know, or do you remember, that they remade this movie like 4 years ago?
No. The only thing I knew about this movie was the title. It was also the title of a popular love song, but I didn't even know that song came from this movie, the Lionel Richie song. Like, I remember that was in, like, Happy Gilmore or something as a joke.
Yeah,
that's how I knew it.
Crazy. Yeah. It's crazy because I was like, wait, because in the opening credits it says, or original theme written by Lionel Richie, and I was like, wait, that's this movie? They remade it 4 years ago. I think it was kind of like an erotic teen thriller. They changed some things because right out of the gate, I will say that this movie is very problematic. However, that does not mean that I did not absolutely love it because it is batshit bananas, and we will get into that shortly. This movie, I thought there weren't going to be a lot, but there actually have been a lot. This is a movie that was nominated for both an Academy Award for Best Original Song, as well as for the Razzie Awards. It got nominated for like six Razzie Awards. We'll get into that in a little bit. But I was like, I can't believe, like, that's got to be uncommon, and like, there's a bunch of them actually. Then actually, in a little bit, when we get to Vanilla Sky, that's another one that'll be another Tom Cruise movie nominated for both Oscars and Razzies. So
interesting.
It's not terribly uncommon, but I think notable. It's always notable, I think, when a movie that we do is nominated for Academy Awards, and then especially when it's nominated for Academy Awards and Razzie Awards. Did not win Best Original Song because the theme from Arthur, won, because that's a great song. Noteworthy to kick things off with an Academy Award nominated film, Endless Love, a movie in which a 24-year-old actor has a sexual relationship with a 15 or 16-year-old Brooke Shields.
And brother, man, like, that stuff was creeping me out. Like, I couldn't, like, follow this movie entirely because of the way it just threw crazy shit at me from left to right.
Oh, I loved it so much.
I mean, I get it. Like, but it's not a good movie. Like, but it it's enjoyable as, like, a bad movie. It's on that level for sure. But I just couldn't even keep track of everything. I hope that was a body double. That's all I wanted.
It was. I looked that up. It was, because you never see her face and her breasts at the same time, which is good because.
But just suggesting that was
a child.
Icky.
I know. Yeah. I know. So the tagline to this movie is: she is 15, he is 17. The love every parent fears. Which, first question. Is that the love every parent fears? Because that feels, I mean, I understand that you maybe don't want your 15-year-old daughter having sex, but, like, if she is, I don't think 17 is crazy. Like, I think if they wanted to make it edgy, maybe do, like, 16 and 19 or something?
Or you do, like, 16 and...
Actually, 24, which the actor was.
Yeah, I was going to say, right, like, you do it for real that way. Like, that even just seems more realistic. But no, because, like, that's just, like, a freshman dating a junior or something. Like, I don't...
Right, like, it's just an older high school guy, and it's also happens to be an older high school guy that's the same age as her brother. Like, it's not, like, this crazy, like, oh, she met this, like, you know, this random guy on the street. It's just an older guy, which, again, the fact that she's 15 and he's 24 or whatever, 23 in real life, that's icky. But I think within the movie, and I also wrote down the word ew like six times in my notes, but the fact that she, like, the age difference there is 2 years, the movie's trying to sensationalize it, but I don't think it's that gross.
Yeah, and it doesn't even seem like the central issue that causes the rift with the parents either. Like, Brooke Shields' parents are extremely liberal, and they don't mind that the boyfriend's hanging out and sleeping over and all that, but it's not until Brooke Shields' character can't get to sleep and starts stealing her dad's sleeping pills, and then the dad gets really fucking pissed, and there's the ultimatum that the boy can't see each other anymore.
For 30 days, yes.
And it leads to much more crazy shit I was not expecting.
Which we have Tom Cruise to blame for, and we will get to that for sure. Did you know that Brooke Shields' mother, Terry Shields, was on set with her every day, making sure she was protected, but she's also
good.
A nurse in this movie. She plays a nurse in one of the scenes. I think maybe when he goes to the psychiatric hospital.
Yes.
She's on set there. So she was there to make sure that her daughter was not exploited. Interestingly, the woman who plays, the actress who plays Jade's mom, Brooke Shields' mom, her name is Shirley Knight, begged the director to cast, like, literally, it seems like, anyone else for the part. Like, she offered, according to IMDb, Rosanna Arquette, Linda Blair, Bo Derek, Carrie Fisher, Jodie Foster, Melanie Griffith, Jennifer Jason Leigh, shout out to Cinemakers, Christy McNichol, Michelle Pfeiffer, or Deborah Winger, and she just didn't think that the 16-year-old Brooke Shields had the type of talent, an acting talent, to be in the movie. Huh. Brooke Shields' mom is like, I don't think that, Brooke Shields' mom was against her taking the part because she's like, she's just going to be there to look pretty, which I think that's kind of the point. Like, she's supposed to be this, like, innocent, pure, virginal character who has a sexual relationship, but again, it's not a perverted sexual relationship, it's just right. A lot kind of quickly, but at the same time, one of the first scenes, they're having a party, David Axelrod, the main character, comes over, right? Jade is in a white dress. And I was like, is this a wedding? No. She's just virginal and pure. But she's, like, sitting on her dad's lap and, like, kissing his face. And I'm like, what? That's more fucked up than, like, the relationship with the boyfriend.
Yeah, and they call him Pappy. That threw me.
Yeah.
No, there's some underlying shit going on with the dad and the daughter that they do not get into here, but is clearly causing some issue that isn't being addressed. Like, there's like it feels like there's a jealousy between the father
and
the boyfriend, where he's like, I want to be doing what he's doing. And it's just like, oh man, relax. There's other movies like this where the tone is more appropriate, where it's like a movie like Fear with Mark Wahlberg, where he starts dating Reese Witherspoon and is like a very abusive boyfriend, and there's a cause for the dad to, like, want to get into a fist fight with him or whatever and stuff. But, like, this movie just, I was waiting for there to be reason for conflict because everybody was just so okay with, you know what I'm saying? Like, the dad even sees David naked, and then Brooke Shields, like, is like, okay, bye, we're going to bed.
Yeah.
And like, can kind of get over that even. Like, the wife explains, you know, it's okay, he's been doing this for a while, and, you know, this is how we raised her, and she's not an idiot, right? And, like, she is kind of independent.
The mom says a line later when the dad is, you know, giving her shit, and she says, someone finally had the courage to wake up Sleeping Beauty. We've been waiting for this moment for our beautiful daughter to get fucked. Like, be okay with it. Like, that's what she's saying. It gets crazy.
It's wild. I feel bad for Brooke Shields, too, because, like, this seems to have been her early career, like this and Blue Lagoon and other fields. Like, she's just there because she's beautiful. It's unfortunate because, like, this role does seem to, I feel like it required more strength as an actor. Like, if there was someone like Carrie Fisher here, like, to bring, you know, a little more of the darkness to light, I think it would have been stronger on her end. Like, I would have felt more, I think, in general, aside from just, like, no, I don't think they should be together either, because it seems, like, icky to me, just in behind the scenes. Like, I don't know, I was just having trouble adjusting to what was on screen for myself to even get into the movie all the way. But
the craziest thing is that the mom sees Brooke Shields and David having sex in front of the fireplace, and I will come back to that in a second, but basically comes downstairs because she hears something, which she says later that she thought was a robber. Comes downstairs, sees them banging, looks at them from the stairs, and then goes upstairs, and we find out later sleeps with her husband. She is so turned on by the idea of her daughter having sex that she has to go have sex with her husband. We find out later that she pictured herself having sex with David. So it feels like what the movie is hinting at with the dad and Brooke Shields, with the dad and Jade, it's like overtly saying that the mom wants to have sex with David. It's like there's all this like intergenerational, seemingly behind the scenes relationships that aren't really played out, but then become like really major plot points. Like it's real weird. Oh,
yeah, especially in the second half. Just to jump way far ahead, don't David and the mother end up like making out together, like towards the end?
She's in like a nightgown, and he comes over because he's looking for Jade. This is after he goes to the psychiatric hospital. We gotta get to why he goes to the psychiatric hospital, because it is crazy.
but that is, you know, that's where Tom Cruise comes
yes,
in.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes, yes. So he gets out of that. He finds out that the family moved east. So he goes to New York, finds out where the mom lives, finds out that the mom and the dad have separated. Not his parents, Jade's parents. He goes to her apartment. She's living there alone. But she's, like, in, like, a nightgown. And then it's just, like, making moves, then, like, makes out with him. And then he says, and I quote, "I can't make love to anybody but Jade." Like, he's like, "I would have sex with you right now, but my heart's just not in it. I love your daughter." Which is admirable, I guess.
It's insane, though, that the mom is, like, telling him, "Oh, the night I saw you and my daughter together, I went up and pretended you were my husband."
Yeah.
Like, it's like this full confession, and this is after he's destroyed their family, like,
yeah,
everything they ever had, over a crush. I mean, look, they were in love, but it's like, it's teenage love, you know, like Romeo and Juliet, right? Like, they took it to the extreme, I feel. It's like, you know, you got to dial it back. There's a whole life ahead of you, kids. Like, you're going to have a broken heart for a while, but you'll get over each other eventually. But not these two, not this story. This is more of a tragic tale of warning than of, like, endless love.
So I don't know if you know this director, Zeffirelli, I think is his name.
Name isn't sounding familiar.
Franco Zeffirelli. He's done a lot of Shakespeare, including, which should come as no surprise based on this movie, a Romeo and Juliet adaptation in the 60s. Okay. But apparently he has this track record, both in Romeo and Juliet and then another movie and then this movie. He finds this, like, young actor for the male lead who, like, is, like, this, supposed to be this, like, breakout star, and then they never catch on. Like, their career never catches on. And so it was, like, three in a row. Like, they all, like, went through these, like, massive career slumps. Like, I looked up the guy who played David, and, like, he's best known for this movie, which is kind of sad a little bit.
Like, he's not terrible. Like,
no,
he at least can carry the movie, I feel. Like, he's fine. It's like Brooke Shields went on and became I think out of everybody here, it was, I mean, aside from Cruise, of course, James Spader was in here. Like,
and did
that,
you
really
know, I don't know if you recognize,
like,
the younger brother is Ian Ziering.
No,
a the star
way.
Of the Sharknado movies, yes.
You only get a shot at, when he showed up, I was like, wait a minute, there's another brother? Like, I didn't
yeah,
even know
for,
he
for
was
no
alive.
Reason. And also, I know the name, I don't really know who she is, and I don't know who she plays in this, because I looked up her character, just some, you know, like, second or third tier character. Jamie Gertz is in this movie, too. This is her first role, too.
Huh.
So this is like a kickoff for three, you know, pretty successful actors, including, of course, the man we're here to talk about, Tom Cruise. But yeah, going back to David for a second, so it was nominated for 6 Razzies, not him. Like, he did not get a Razzie nomination. It was nominated for Worst Picture, which is understandable, Worst Actress, Brooke Shields, Worst Supporting Actress, Shirley Knight, Jade's mom, Brooke Shields' mom, Worst Director, Worst Screenplay, and, oh, he was nominated for Worst New Star, Martin Hewitt as David. So, not necessarily the worst performance, but I guess that might be, like, the worst character, the worst part that, like, was supposed to be, like, a breakout role, you know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah,
I can
that's
sort of
the
see
thing.
That, like, if this is supposed to, like, springboard his career, I can be like, well, I understand why that didn't happen.
Yeah, because he was known as the guy who, like, had underage sex, broke up an entire family, caused their dad to get hit by a car. Like, everyone hates him for the rest of his life.
Right.
Like, at the end of this movie, you don't like his character anymore, you know? Like, there's, yeah, so I could see, like, if he showed up in another movie trying to play a nice guy, I'd be like, I don't know, I can't get over Endless Love yet.
Because the weird thing about this movie is that the family, Jade's family, hates him for what they think is breaking up the family, right? Like, him sleeping over, leaving quietly in the morning, and, like, the only negative thing is that, like, she's awake all night having sex and speaking and like, you know, talking to him, like, and being with him, and then can't fall asleep. But like, he's not disrupting anything else, and he seems like a generally nice guy. It's just like this crazy. So like, they think he's like tearing this family apart, and then he actually tears the family apart. It's like this like self-fulfilling prophecy that like they thought that he was going to end their family, which he wasn't, but then he did.
Like, that's what's so crazy is how he's portrayed as such a nice guy, and almost to a degree, like a victim, I'd say, up until like the incident, which we'll call it until we get into it. But you know, like he's James Spader's good friend, and they're at the party having a good time. And but then, like, all of a sudden, Spader comes up to him. He's like, "Oh, we're just friends because you fucked my sister." And I'm like, "Whoa, whoa! Like, where's this animosity coming from? Where's all this anger coming from? Everybody, this seems to be like a very loving, accepting family of all this, and that they would like all want to talk about it rationally together." But then all it takes is for the dad to find that his daughter's on drugs. He can't handle that and the underage sex, and it's just whatever else is messing up his mind. He ends up, after he gets divorced, getting together with like a much younger woman, you know? So like that also I'm trying to read some things into, but
oh no, nothing to read into. Like, it's over. Like, he wants to have sex with his daughter and he can't. So he finds a girl who's like roughly her age, maybe, or maybe a little bit older.
So I was sort of like blindsided by life. I was feeling a little like David, like that. But I mean, I would have just stayed away. I would have respected the family's wishes. And
but
he
man,
has
he's
a
in love.
very
He can't.
no, and he has a interaction with destiny at some point. Like, it's just that one moment this person comes into his life and puts this inceptions this idea into his mind, and it can't get it out.
Which we will talk about next. But before we get off the topic of the dad's new girlfriend, I just want to mention that she is referred to a couple times as Ingrid Archester, Citizen of Jupiter. And I was wondering,
what?
Like, because Jupiter's like a town in New Jersey, and I was wondering if like that's, or if the mom's saying she's an alien. Like, I don't know, because a very specific maybe insult, I don't know. But it was like, Ingrid Archester, Citizen of Jupiter. And I was like, that's weird. That's a weird way to describe her. Clearly, the mom does not like her because, you know, her family's been broken up. I'm sure she still maybe had feelings for her husband, and, like, he's now with this younger, more attractive woman or whatever. But, like, Ingrid Archester, Citizen of Jupiter. I don't know.
It sounds very pretentious. Like, I think she's just trying to paint her in a negative light. But I don't think she's trying to say she's from the planet Jupiter, like she's a space case or flighty or new agey or anything. I think it's just like, like a sort of like a passive aggressive insult, you know, just like, and introducing so-and-so from this place, like, just to make sure you know exactly who she is and where she's from every time she introduces herself. Like, that kind of thing, it seems like.
So let us talk now. So, okay, so actually, before we get into the Tom Cruise part, you and I decided, Mike, that if people are listening to this, they might know us, that we did a Nicolas Cage podcast, a Keanu Reeves podcast, a Charlize Theron podcast, Shia LaBeouf podcast, where we did the same thing we're doing here. We went through all the movies, beginning to end, except for Shia, because it was a weird backwards thing. You know, we've done other actors on the network, like I do Channing and Zac Efron and Gosling with Joe Too, who will be on this show.
Yeah, the Shia thing was more of an art installation than a podcast.
All those other shows, we sort of had a little bit less structure to the conversation, which I don't mind. But we're going to try something new on this show, on both TomTom shows. And we're going to talk about our favorite and least favorite moments in the movie. And I have to guess, Mike, that we have the same favorite moment in this movie, which is the wonderful, wonderful 48 seconds that Mr. Tom Cruise makes his film debut as Billy the Arsonist, where he just shows up.
Is it only 48 seconds?
It's 48
that he's on
seconds.
Screen? It is maybe the most spectacular 48 seconds I've seen on screen in a long time. I gotta tell you, I was not prepared for what I saw. I was just not ready for it.
I have an idea. What do you say? So we kidnap her. Say $1 million in ransom.
Shut up.
Listen, some woman did that to me, I'd burn her damn house down.
Hey, I tried that. I ever tell you guys? 8 years old and I was into arson.
You're full of it.
No, I'm serious. I lit a whole pile of newspapers. You ever try to light a whole pile of wet newspapers? Jeez, it smokes like crazy. I got real scared, see? But you want to hear the wild part? It's like I'm a hero or something. They thought I saved the whole block. To this day, my mother thinks I'm a hero. Hey, you better not tell her what I just told you.
So here's what we know about Billy. Billy likes to play soccer. Billy likes to get shirtless immediately, which I was like, that's another reason that this is almost like a Joe 2 podcast. You know what I mean? Like, he gets shirtless, and like, he gets shirtless like it's his job to get shirtless. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Billy likes cut off jean shorts that way, way too short. Billy likes his tighty whities that you can see.
Yeah.
Because he's just spreading that crotch for half the 48 seconds.
He comes on screen. So, like, this is after Jade's parents tell David, you can't see her for 30 days. And he, like, goes over to the house, and they won't let him in. He sees her at school. He rides away. He's like, I'm trying to respect their wishes. And then he's talking to his friends. They're like, man, that sucks. Like, you should, blah, 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 whatever.
Oh, his one friend goes, heh, you should kidnap her, man.
Yeah, which, you know,
what?
Is another way this movie probably could have gone. Although, is it kidnapping if she wants to be taken?
Well, I think it's she's underage. She's 15, right? So the parents would be like, yeah.
But he's underage too, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. Not sure. I don't know. Billy, Tom Cruise, comes in, kicks a soccer ball away, gets mad that it doesn't go his way or whatever, takes his shirt off and tells a story that I was like, what the fuck does this have anything to do with anything? And he's like, you know, when I was 8, I was into arson. I took a stack of wet newspapers, tried to set it on fire. But then the crazy twist of the story is that my mom thinks I'm a hero. So, like, obviously it didn't work, or maybe it did work and he rescued the family or whatever. Like, we don't really have much of a backstory here.
He said, I think he mentioned he was either caught or he changed his mind at the last second, so he was seen putting out the fire. So
I think that's what it was.
He was like, a hero.
But we don't know why he was going to do it, right?
Like, no. It just seemed like
just
for
gonna
fun.
Do it. And so I was like, that's so weird. Like, that has nothing to do with anything. Like, why have that in this movie? I mean, I love it because obviously the reason we're watching this movie is for this 48 second clip. But why have that here? What does
so
that have anything
left field
to do with anything? A scene or two later, we see, outside of Jade's house, a stack of wet newspapers on her front porch, and I was like, holy shit, he's gonna do what Tom Cruise did, and, like, start a, like, but I don't understand, where is the logic here?
So here's what was going on. Like, after that scene, he was not invited to this big kegger that they're having at Jade's house, right? Like, James Spader is like, my sister, he's like pimping out his sister. He's like, yeah, my sister's single, come over and like
Which
dance
is
and
disgusting.
Like, yeah, and party with her. And so David is like creeping outside the party while Blondie's playing, but like there's a live band playing, so apparently that was supposed to be Blondie. I don't know. But anyway, David is like peeping on the party, and as he's sort of walking around the house on the porch, there's like a predominantly lit sort of stack of newspapers.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Plus there was a line earlier where they made a fire and the dad was like, only I make the fires in my house. There's something I gotta be in charge of. And David's like, I'll leave when the house is on fire. And I was like, thought back to that line and was like, holy
bananas.
Shit.
Like the whole, pardon the pun, the inciting incident in this movie comes from the 48 seconds, the reason we're watching this movie. Like, that is insane. Like, that is crazy to me.
Like, it's so random.
This minor character who is not in the rest of the movie, it's an hour and 55 minutes, Tom Cruise on screen for 48 seconds. He is the one who inspires the idea to essentially set a house on fire and then become a hero somehow, and then that'll win them over, and you can be with their daughter again. But also, that's coming from the logic of, like, a 16-year-old boy who was remembering back to when he was 8. There's no logic there. Like, that's just, what are you doing?
Like, I was so, like, it was the one time I was thinking, I was like, I'm actually really impressed that the movie had this scene where a completely superfluous character, like, just waltzes in, says something, and it becomes the basis for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's this, like, earworm that gets in the main character's head, and he just can't shake it. It's like, I mean, the balls, like,
it's
I just kept
so
thinking, the
crazy
balls on this film.
It's so crazy. And so then he lights the stack of newspapers on fire. Apparently 16-year-old Tom Cruise, remembering 8-year-old Tom Cruise, does not actually know how easy it is to light a stack of newspapers on fire. Maybe they weren't wet enough. Suddenly, the entire house is on fire. The entire family gets out, but he's out there. He gets arrested, goes to court. The judge is like, I can sentence you up to 5 years in prison, but I'm going to give you 5 years probation.
No, it was like 20. He's like,
yeah, maximum sentence. Yeah, a long time in prison. But I'm going to give you 5 years probation, but also you have to be remitted to psychiatric care until you can make the nurses believe that you're no longer messed up, essentially. That's essentially what he says.
Yeah, he gets unsaned, right?
And, like, Jade's parents are, like, incensed. Like, they cannot believe that it's getting off like this.
Yeah, like, the bailiff has to, like, hold the dad back.
much time passes? Do they let us know how long he's in that hospital for?
There's one moment when, I think it's the time the parents come to visit, and he's, like, really on edge, and he's, like, I couldn't believe it. He had a line. He goes, you know, they're killing me. I've got to get out of here. It's been 2 years. I was holy shit, 2 years.
So I guess, because it's a long enough time for, presumably, the family to rebuild what they had, break apart, all move their separate ways, the mom to move to New York, Jade to move to Burlington, Vermont, the dad to also move to New York, develop this relationship with Ingrid Archerson, citizen of Jupiter. James Spader would also be in town somewhere. There's enough time for a lot of things to happen. So I figured it was a couple of years, but wow, like that's a lot of time.
Yeah, and they show him in the hospital, and it's, you know, he's not doing much. He's writing letters to Jade that aren't getting mailed. He's not going to groups, so he's not showing any proof that he's getting better, right? Like, he's not playing ball. And he's actually going insane. Like, he thinks he sees Jade in the mirror and, like, turns around and starts screaming her name. So, like, he's starting to need to be there, too. It's like that other self-fulfilling prophecy of the movie, where it's like, he isn't crazy until he actually went to the nut house.
Man, oh man. So then he goes to New York, goes to the mom's house. Jade's not there. Mom tries to have sex with him. He says, no, I can only have sex with Jade. Looks in her little black book, basically, or whatever. Finds where Jade lives. Is going to go to take a bus to Burlington, Vermont to meet up with Jade and fall in love, I guess, and stay up there. But while he's on his way to the bus depot, he sees Jade's dad Ingrid Archerson, citizen of Jupiter. And the dad sees him, loses his mind, sprints across New York City traffic to presumably, like, beat the shit out of him, and gets hit by a taxi and has one of the most incredible hit-by-a-car stunts I've ever seen in the movie.
I couldn't believe it.
So good.
I couldn't believe, like, in this movie, they pulled that off? Like, where's the rest of the production value?
I do feel like, though, I was thinking about this, like, I feel like for all the movies that we see as a first movie, like when we saw Best of Times, we saw Going Great for Keanu, or even, you know, Children of the Corn 3, Urban Harvest for Charlize, like, this feels more like a movie. Like, this feels like there was a lot of money thrown here. And I feel like it's not necessarily, I mean, it's obviously, like, a wacky movie, but I feel like there's decent production value, and then for them to execute that, like, there's clearly, like, talent here behind the screen.
Yeah, you know what else was good was the actual house fire. Because I was like, whoa, they're really going to torch this thing.
Like, they burned the house down. That looked like they burned the house down.
Yeah, if they didn't, that was one hell of a controlled fire. So when they actually need to flex, they really do pull it off like that. Like, yeah, the key moments definitely work.
So the budget on this was $16 million.
Okay.
Do you want to guess how much money it made?
I think it was a hit. I like because it was.
I mean, they remade it.
It was a very popular book, right? Like, it's an adaptation of a novel. But then again, I don't know, like, let alone today, back then. So $16 million. I'm gonna say like 30. Double.
It made 32. Yep. It made almost all of that in the U.S. The crazy thing. So it made. In its opening weekend, made $4 million. According to, like, Box Office Mojo back in the 80s does not look like it has a ton of information, but according to Box Office Mojo, it opened the same week as, believe it or not, Arthur. So the two of the songs nominated for Best Original Song opened there. Endless Love made $4.1 million. Arthur made $2.7 million. Endless Love won the weekend. So it was a hit. If you're able somehow, I don't know how, maybe just the fact that you're living in 1981, if you're able to overlook the creepy pedophilia of it all, I can see that this being, like, this can be the type of movie that a lot of people would want to see.
Yeah, I don't think that people were picking up on a lot of the shit that we're picking up on nowadays, right? Like, social cues.
Well, we're both very smart.
Well, yeah, we're super woke, you know? But I'm just saying, like, this society perception is just so different, radically different back then. Like, you just wouldn't make it like this today either. So I don't think that was creeping people out as much back then. I think people were excited to see Brooke Shields, you know, Blue Lagoon and stuff.
Was this before her Calvin Klein ads? Yes, right?
Yeah, I think it was. I think so.
Okay.
I don't know her timeline precisely. I just vividly remember Blue Lagoon as a little kid.
Okay.
I think like the book probably helped. The song, it's not a terrible song. It's not exactly like my taste or anything. I'm not really into love ballads like that or anything, but like I would maybe play it at my wedding at some point. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's that kind of song.
Right.
It's like a prom song or something. Yeah, it has a lot of elements going for it. It just, I don't feel like it aged very well. That's all.
So Blue Lagoon came out the year before. So she was, I guess, like 14, 15 there. And she's like 15, 16 here. So that's still like, that's crazy. So, okay. So the dad gets hit by a car. The dad dies.
That is so nuts. I couldn't believe. I actually rewound it when he got hit by a car. Cause I was like, did he really?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Like,
yeah.
This movie.
The dad dies. Then that brings all the family together, so that's like why James Spader sees him, loses his mind about David. David leaves, but then Jade comes down to New York. David and Jade have this moment where, like, he basically just, like, lays on top of her and kisses her. Like, you know, we talk about how in Fast and Furious, like, Dom, like, wills the memory back into Letty. You know what I mean? Like, he just, like...
Oh, the amnesia, yeah.
He like, removes her amnesia. Like, it feels like, in a really creepy, perverted way, that, like, David lays on Jade and, like, kisses her until she's like, oh, right, I love you again. Like, it just feels like she's not into it. And then, like, within, like, 10 seconds, she's like, oh, no, David, like, I need to be with you.
Oh, yeah. It's really bad.
Creepy.
It's really bad because, I mean, he forces himself on her. She starts saying no. Do they end up sleeping together? Like, she ends up saying, the scene ends with her saying yes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But she's really resisting a lot. And I was like, dude, this is, again, like, you gotta pull back. Like, you're obsessive now. Like, now you are crazy. This is too far. And she ends up relenting. And it's just, yeah, dude, you just, oh, man. Like, I wish it was, you know, I'm not saying it would have been right, but I just wish she was more like, I missed you too, this and that, like, you're right. You know, it just would have made that play a little better as opposed to it being, like, him starting to rape her. Like, oh, like, I couldn't, yeah.
And, like what adds to the creepy is that they're in, like, a sketchy motel, and, like, that's when James Spader finds out where they're staying, ambushes him in the lobby, and is like, you killed my dad, because he's there with Ingrid Archerson, Citizen of Jupiter.
Oh, that's right, like, she saw him at the accident scene.
And
oh,
she's like, yeah, crazy. That's him. And James Spader thinks somehow convinced the dad to, like, die. Like, I don't know what, like, there's no logic.
He thinks
there.
That it, like, he was, like, across the street and was, like, goading him, was, like, come and get me, kind of, or, like, did it intentionally, I think. And it was just
Which,
an
even
accident.
If that's the case, that's not his fault.
Exactly. Like, he was literally just walking down the other side of the street, their eyes locked. It was, like, a sheer coincidence, it seems. And the dad flips out.
And David looks terrified. Like, when David realizes who he's looking at, he's like, oh, like, this is not good. Like, in a city of, you know, 9 million people, like, this is the guy that I'm looking at, like, that's not good. And so James Spader and David start fighting. The cops show up. David is, like, in a rage and just trying to get back to Jade, and then goes to prison, presumably for the rest of his life. Like, I don't know, like, that's probably not the case, or maybe he broke parole. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't
he
know.
he definitely broke parole, and James Spader is yelling, like, he's on parole, and he's fighting, and then he definitely hits a cop at one point, and then they beat the shit out of him and shove him into the back of a squad car, and, like, that's the end of him. And I was like, oh, you're going through processing, like, you're not getting out. If you get out, it's going to be a long time from now, like, even if you just, you know, get out on parole.
And the movie ends with Jade, I think, talking to her mom about how, like, she'll only ever love David, and then we, like, the camera sort of pulls back, and, like, we're looking at David looking out at her through a prison cell. Like, that's probably just, like, some kind of, like, imagination, like, a dream that he's having or whatever, but, like, you know, they're separated by the law, by the man, forever. Like, forever to never be together again. Endless love or not.
Yeah, and doesn't it end on, like, a freeze frame of Brooke Shields' face? And
yeah.
It, like, fades to blue, and then the song kicks in. And I was just so dumbfounded. I didn't know what to do with myself when this movie ended. So I just kind of sat there and tried to make sense of it a little. And then I just... it was like, forget it. I'll wait until the podcast to talk it out.
And I don't know if you watch the credits all the way through, but the credits end with, like, a really abrupt, awkward audio fade out. They ran out of credits before the song ended, or I don't know if it was Endless Love or if it was a different song, but, like, it just, like, cuts off really quick. I was just like, Oh, all right.
Okay. The movie couldn't wait to be over. It was like, we're getting out of here.
So I have a couple other things that I want to mention. Brooke Shields' eyebrows on point. I sent a picture to Kara and Jordan of the Wistful Thinking podcast. I was like, look at baby Brooke Shields and her eyebrows. Look how good they are. And Kara was like, yeah, they are. So definitely great eyebrows there. Good music. Not only the Endless Love, but they have the Kiss song I Was Made for Loving You that he's cranking in his bedroom, which is great. And then when he goes to the party that he's not invited to, they're cranking, or they're, I don't think they're actually playing there. I think they're just playing in the movie. Blondie's Heart of Glass is playing. I was like, this is like, it was like back to back. I was like, this is cool music.
That was actually where I started to think to myself, maybe this movie isn't as totally terrible as I originally thought, because I emailed you early on. I was like, I'm watching this thing, it's horrible. Right after I sent that was the Tom Cruise scene, and I sort of, you know, my whole attitude shifted after that. And that Blondie song party sequence was actually kind of haunting. I was like, well, this is pretty interesting and working for me. The whole fire thing happened and the movie just went out of control again. I couldn't keep up.
So I think, do you agree with me that your favorite moment is your favorite moment the Tom Cruise scene?
Oh yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
What would you say is your least favorite moment in this movie, aside from the creepy rape, or maybe that's it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's so many to choose from, unfortunately. But yeah, I have to go with the ending when he's sort of forcing himself upon her to sexually make her remember what they had, kind of thing. Like, I don't like that. That made me feel gross.
My pick is something that goes on a little bit behind the scene, just as an IMDb trivia. During the lovemaking scene, Franco Zeffirelli, the director, squeezed Brooke Shields' big toe off camera to provoke a reaction that would look like an orgasm.
Oh, that would have been mine if I knew that.
Yeah, that's real gross. Real gross. So Meg Ryan auditioned for the role of Jade.
Oh, okay.
Like
the actress said, anyone but Brooke Shields, right? Like, just age-wise, not just skill-wise, but just like get someone who's like 18 or something.
And then considering how his actors never really panned out, I'm glad this didn't happen, but do you know who auditioned for the role of David Axelrod before Martin Hewitt was cast?
Tom Hanks. No shit.
Auditioned for the role of David Axelrod. And I read that and I was like, oh my God. Like, Tom Cruise had never crossed over, and yet somehow, in Tom Cruise's first movie, there was almost a crossover there.
I'm really glad that Tom Hanks did not get this job.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Like, it's really spooky. I mean, it's really weird that he auditioned for this, and we almost got, like, in the first movie, both Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks would have been an Endless Love episode. Would have been crazy pants, but I'm really glad that he did not get this movie, because he definitely would not be Tom Hanks that we know and love today.
So the only thing I want to get to before we get to our segments to the back half of the show is I was trying to think, because we had for Cage Club, we had Compromising, which we use in terms of saying having sex with, because that was from The Boy in Blue. That's how they spoke back then in the 1890s. Mm-hmm. For Keanu Club, we had Sipping Tea with Miss McGill from the hockey movie. What was the
Young
hockey
Bloods.
Movie called? Young Bloods. For Shia, what did we have for Shia?
Oh man, did we have?
You didn't really have sex with a lot of women.
Well, we did in Nymphomania, right? Like, he went off the charts in Nymphomania. But
I don't know. We might not have one there. For Charlize, we never really truly settled on one. I pitched in the first episode doing the Dirty Corn, because there is a nightmare sequence in which the parents of the adopted children are having sex, and then like there's just corn sprouting everywhere, and like the woman's chewing on dirty corn, and like it's just real weird and gross. You never liked that. That never caught on. So I have an idea based on this one. Then I had an idea for a future one I think is a better one, because this one, my idea here doesn't have to do with Tom Cruise, but I think, you know, in this scene, I think fireplacing. Fireplacing, like, you know, oh, they were fireplacing. You know what I mean? Like, they were, because they bang in front of the fireplace, and that's when the mom sees them, goes upstairs and sleeps with her husband. However, the one that makes more sense, I think, within the scope of the podcast is taking her breath away.
Oh, okay, yeah, because of the song from Top Gun. And
because that's like the iconic sex scene in there. And I was trying to think, we talked about, I think, on the intro that you've seen way more Cruise and Hanks movies than I have. Mm-hmm. In my head, I just don't think he has sex in a ton of movies. I'm sure he does, but just thinking about them, obviously that scene in Top Gun is a big one. Obviously, all of Eyes Wide Shut, he and Nicole Kidman are basically in their underwear or whatever, and there's like the orgy scenes and stuff.
There is one of the greatest sex scenes, I think, of his career, is him and Elizabeth Shue under the waterfall in Cocktail. That is just visually, like,
so maybe waterfall.
So that could be, don't go chasing waterfalls.
But I think for now, based on this movie, what we can use is fireplacing. Like they were, like he was fireplacing or they were fireplacing or whatever.
Okay.
Because it doesn't have to do with his character, but also fire comes back later in a big way in this movie. And so fireplacing, I think, is a decent sort of fill in there for what we could call having sex with. Because it's just, like, we could say having sex with, but I just think it's funnier to have a euphemism. Like, we had quadruple spacing for Zack Attack. Oh, no, we had something for Shy. I don't remember what it was, though.
Yeah, we definitely had something. I mean, once we get to Risky Business, it might just be he's doing some risky business again. Because, like, that movie is just, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but like,
I have not. I have not seen Cocktail. I haven't seen that, so.
Oh, man, we'll see.
Oh, can't wait. The only thing I have in my notes is that it did not win any of the Razzie Awards because Mommy Dearest came out the same year, and though I don't think Mommy Dearest is necessarily considered the worst movie, but it seems like everything that this was nominated for, Mommy Dearest won, and also Heaven's Gate won an award or two that it was nominated for as well. So,
have you seen Mommy Dearest?
No, I watched the Ryan Murphy show Feud about Joan and
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis. And I know about it vaguely, but I have not seen Mommy Dearest. I know it's about Joan Crawford and her daughter.
It's about her raising her adoptive daughter and and just being like a, you know, she had troubles, but like she was a very crazy mother. I mean, that lifestyle was insane. But like I love that movie. Like I could see how people think like it deserves some Razzies, but I consider it like pure camp. It is just, I think it's a blast. So
well, just like this movie in ways.
Like so bad that it's good kind of ways. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say about Endless Love before we move on to our games and awards part of the show?
Well, ordinarily when an actor that we cover is only in such a small portion of the movie, I generally say, you know, try and find that clip on YouTube, fast forward to that point in the movie or whatever. But like, I think I want everybody to have to sort of sit through that first 46 minutes and then experience, you know, have the weight and the experience of when Tom Cruise comes on screen and just explodes into movies.
It is, in a way, a lot like Never on Tuesday, right? Because it's like 25 minutes of... I mean, I like this movie a lot more than Never on Tuesday, but in that movie, we have like 25 minutes of like insufferable, like angsty teenage drama or whatever. And then Nicolas Cage shows up with a fake beard and crazy hair and a weird accent. And it's like, yeah, you can watch that scene on YouTube, but to really appreciate how much of a wonder and relief that is, you kind of have to get to that point in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think once you get past that point, stick with it because it's nuts. Like, it is just for the sake of how much shit they could cram and throw at you, it's just, like, mind-boggling. So, you know, I started off the movie, like, in a pretty bad mood, going like, oh, man, like, I'm not going to like this. But I ended the movie in one of those moods where I was just like, oh, boy, I'm glad I sat through the rest of that. In ways, I feel like it paid off. It entertained, let's just say, like for better or and worse.
Right.
It was an entertaining watch.
You know, I knew that we would maybe have to defend our choice to do Tom Cruise because Tom Cruise as a person being so tied to Scientology, which is not very good, to put it lightly, is people have an issue with that. And we've always, for better or worse, been able to separate the art from the artist. And it's really, truly amazing how, at least to me, how little we actually know about these people as people. That, you know, aside from what we know about Nicolas Cage being $12 million in debt or owning a dinosaur skull or having Action Comics number one or loving Superman, like, we don't know a lot about him. I mean, now, I guess, because we talked about him for literally hundreds of hours, we know more about him.
No, but, like, even less about Keanu. What do we know about him? That he makes motorcycles.
We watched that,
like,
biography about him, so
we know the secret history of Keanu, thanks to that guy. But I'm just saying, you know, yeah, we don't know these people. We're not really, involved in their day-to-day kind of thing. So, like, we're not in that level of their life. So, like, that's not what the podcast is about either. I feel like, you know, we're just trying to appreciate and enjoy the movie. And on an entertaining level.
And so I knew that we might have to defend our choice to do that, but I did not expect to have to defend the content of these movies, especially from episode one. So this movie is problematic. Right. There is a really creepy relationship. Again, the movie's relationship is not creepy. I think the actors, a 23-year-old and a 16-year-old, and just like the director squeezing the toe of the 16-year-old like this, you know, beautiful young teenage girl, like, it's icky and gross, and I totally get why you wouldn't want to watch that. But if you're able to get past that, or if you love the idea of just, like, schlock movies, like, this is not meant to be bad, but it's just so bananas in its sincerity at times that it is truly kind of wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing, is that it's super sincere, like, to its core. Like, it almost felt to me at times like one of those after-school specials that are, like, you know, too sincere for their own good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so that is part of it. That, to me, was part of the enjoyment, was trying to wrap my head around how they thought that this was all good, like, that what they're doing was fine.
Yep.
So it's like, how do they think that this was okay?
And I do not know. I really do not know. Okay. So we're going to play a new game to the TomTom Club called The Other Tom. So in this game, we are going to, if we have a guest, the guest will play too. What would this movie be like if Tom Hanks was in the Tom Cruise role? Here's my idea, Mike. Tom Hanks comes off the soccer field, does not take it. Again, this, I feel like, could fall into cliche territory. And I also feel like, because I'm not super familiar with, like, early Tom Hanks, like, you know, He Knows You're Alone or Bosom Buddies and that kind of stuff. Like, I don't have a lot to draw on here. But my idea is that he comes off the soccer field, does not take his shirt off, and says, here's an idea how to get her back. Bake her a pie and get her mother some flowers and help the dad take out the garbage. And just, like, it's like these, like, general, like, well-being, nice tips, and be like, just earn their good graces back with, like, kind words and, like, good deeds. And so instead of, like, talking about literally burning down a house, it's just, like, kill them with kindness, essentially. As, you know, America's dad, as just, you know, a generally nice guy, I would love to see him be like, you know, be kind to her. And then maybe that's, like, maybe the whole back half of the movie works out well. Who knows?
Nice. I'm sort of going along a similar line there, too, but might be taking it a little farther. He comes into frame and he puts on a shirt because he was, you know, kind of the reverse of what Tom Cruise did here. And he's like, yeah, you know something? Like, I overheard what you were talking about. I think you should wait the 30 days. And in fact, like, why don't we start hanging out and, like, you know, you can come over to dinner, the rest of the movie. So, like, the next scene, they're hanging out, and Tom Hanks's character, Billy, not the arsonist anymore, introduces him to his sister, and that's the rest of the movie. Like, he becomes part of that family, and there's never any arson, there's never any murder, there's no death, and it takes, like, a completely different path. And maybe towards the end, like, he bumps into Jade with Tom Hanks and his new girlfriend, and they're just, like, very cordial, and it's like, oh, I'm very glad, like, to see that you're doing well. And the movie ends and everybody's happy.
So it's like an ended love, not endless love, but just an ended love, essentially.
Yeah.
Cool. I like it. Generally just kind of, like, I feel, again, we'll see how Tom Hanks evolves as the things go on. I don't want to make just everything Tom Cruise does nice, but although I kind of like that idea, and I kind of like the idea of just, like, kind of adding a little bit of chaos into the Tom Hanks roles as Tom Cruise. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, Billy is a crazier character than I ever could have hoped for the first role on screen. Like, that is just chef's kiss, il boccio, beautiful. So,
voila.
Shout out. Stan Lee yourself. This is a game, Mike, you came up with for Watch the Throne. If you want a walk-on role into this movie, if you had a minor part, doesn't have to have a line, where would you put yourself? What scene would you be in? What would you be doing in Endless Love?
Oh boy, okay. There's not too many places I really want to insert myself into this movie. I think what I'd do is I would be one of the faculty at the mental ward.
Okay.
You know, the orderlies. I'd be an orderly. Sure. You know, like, okay, that orderly comes up to him and is like, you didn't see the doctor. That's been, like, 3 weeks now. So I'd be an orderly, and I'd come up to him, and I'd be sort of the guy who's, like, sneaking him contraband and be like, here's that chocolate bar, or, like, here's that comic book, or, like, you're going to make it, man. Just, like, hang in there. And so, you know, there's not much to really choose from, so I think I'd take that route.
I think there's a handful of scenes that you could sort of insert yourself to. Like, there's the party scene at the beginning, where there's the live band covering Endless Love, or I guess in the movie it's an original because that doesn't exist outside the movie. So they're performing that. You could be in there. You could be, you know, a soccer player with Tom Cruise, with Billy.
Oh, right, right.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to put myself in the scene where Jade's dad gets hit by the car, and I'm going to be just standing next to David, and I'm going to be overacting so hard. Like, I just cannot believe what I just saw in front of me. Mouth agape, just hand over mouth, just, like, you know, hat on head, just, you know, like, hand on head, like, picking up the hat, like, I can't, like, walking it off back and forth, like, can you believe this guy just got hit by a car and flipped like that? Just, like, in this very heavy dramatic scene, just, like, overacting to the nines, and that would be what I would be doing in Endless Love.
Nice.
Okay.
I think that's great. I think there's a lot of that going on in the background of this movie as well. You know, like at the party, I noticed like a couple people dancing really weird, like conversations, like a lot of hand acting at the parties and stuff. So, yeah.
Well, what I noticed, and I mentioned this on Too Fast, Too Forever, lap one, when we talked about Fate of the Furious, at the end of the beginning of that movie, Dom has the Cuban Mile. He races through the streets of Havana.
Love it. Yeah.
It's a great race. And at the end, he is surrounded by a mob of happy people, happy that he won. Spoilers. But of course, he's going to win. And I was saying to Joe, I was like, if you watch any single person in that crowd, they're doing insane things. Like, whenever there's a crowd scene, like, they're all, like, I think instructed basically to be just, like, look happy, cheerful, you know, raise, like, pump your fist or whatever. But if you watch any one person, like, they don't feel real. Like, collectively, they add up to a believable scene. But if you focus on any one individual, it's just like, what are you doing? So I feel like in that party scene, maybe at the scene at the end where he gets hit by the car, I feel like there's probably a lot of banana stuff that's happening on screen that you just, you know, you're so, at least at the end, so amazed that the dad got hit by a car that you're not really focusing on the overacting or whatever. But I'm sure there's a lot, like in every movie, not just this movie, but every movie, whenever there's like a bunch of people doing something, it's just like, what?
Yeah, I love that. That's a great phenomenon. Yeah, pick any one person out and they don't belong, but like look at them all as a collective and it fits perfectly.
Yeah. So we have a mailbag. Oh, wait, what is her email address? Hang on. I don't know what, I think it's just run. I think it's run@cageclub.me. We have an email address
that.
Here.
That is awesome.
Let us find here because Tom Cruise's social media banner, social media byline, tagline, whatever, says running in movies since 1981. He is running in this movie. That's what we have to keep track every time, Mike. Does Tom Cruise run? The answer is yes, he does in this movie. We're also going to have a best running scene, although I think it's probably going to be the MI Fallout scene, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be, like, the first Mission Impossible, then that'll get usurped by the second, and that one by the third, and so forth and so on.
No, we have Cruise at CageClub.me. Actually, I'm going to make right now run@CageClub.me.
Thanks. I like that. I love that.
So there we go. Email run@cageclub.me. Let us know what you think of the show, of the episodes. Have you seen this movie? Because this movie is kind of amazing. Just, you know, say hi. We also have a Patreon page, which I know that you're new to this, so if you don't want to donate yet, that's totally fine. But we have been creating podcasts for 3.5 years now. If you want to throw us a couple bucks, if you want to control what we are doing, who we watch next, you certainly can. Patreon.com/cageclub. Go there. Just let us know. Just say hi. It's sort of a community for people who like our shows. It's relatively new, so there's not a lot of people over there yet. But if you want to support us in what we're doing, the show will always be free. But if you want to either get more content, get merch, throw us a couple bucks, whatever, patreon.com/cageclub. It is time now for the awards segment. Is there a name that we could, based on this movie, like the Fire Awards? But that's not going to stick.
I mean, just based on Billy the Arsonist, like, how about like we can't be like the Golden Shirtless Awards or anything, but like maybe like the Silver Jean Shorts at this point or something?
Maybe.
Golden Shirtless sounds so funny to me, though.
The Golden Shirtless?
It's one of those like nonsense combo words, but like...
So whatever the awards are going to be, so we have, I just took these from Charlize, Best Film, Worst Film, I don't think so, Best of the Worst, Most Fun Bad Film, for sure, Best Role, Worst Role, no, Most Wasted Performance, maybe?
I mean,
because
here's what
I
I'll
want
say.
More Billy.
Like, as much as I want Billy to be the rest of this movie, like, he comes in and explodes, and, like, in and out, right? Like, it just feels like, almost feels like the perfect dash of flavoring, you know, of, like, Emerald, he's like, bam, Billy the Arsonist, bam. Like, it only takes one pinch of Billy the Arsonist, so I think it's
maybe not wasted, maybe it's perfect.
I think it might be. Might be pitch perfect.
Best fight, none. No, best dancing. Best outfit, no. Best death, no. Best line,
Best death, no? Not, I mean...
He doesn't die, no, it's just, it's his deaths.
Oh, right, Tom Cruise death. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought getting hit by
No. That would, that might win for the entire show, but, you know, keep him again, because we have 45 of these movies to watch.
Did we have a most unexpected death category ever? Because, boy oh boy, that, I think, in all movies I've ever watched, is, like, one of the most out-of-nowhere unexpected deaths.
The line that I'm going to nominate, I don't think we ever had that category. It maybe should have, but... For sure, that would be in play here. The line I'm going to nominate for this movie is 8 years old and I was into arson in Endless Love. Because, wow.
Someone wrote that and Tom Cruise said it.
Best or worst, non-Cruise actor, male or female?
Again, I don't feel like it's them. I feel like it's the material for me. Like, I give everybody here all the credit in the world for trying to pull off this insane story thing. So I don't really want to put any hurt on the actors here. I mean, you know, you could say Brooke Shields doesn't have, like, the skill, or James Spader is great in every time because he's electric. Because he is electric. Like, he's great. Like, he's fully formed James Spader.
I also want to say that this is now the second podcast we've started in the last couple of years where he was a major character in the first episode. He was the first episode of Cinemakers in Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now here again for Endless Love. Obviously not as big of a role as he was in Sex, Lies, but again, first episode of a show. Here he is.
Yeah, so I don't have a nominee for that category, but if you do.
No, I think in the grand scheme of things, I think this will be ultimately a sort of a forgotten movie, but I do want to make sure that we nominated, and we did, for best of the worst, most fun, bad film, and then best line, I think, also works well, too. So I think we're good.
Yeah, like, I don't want to create, like, too much awareness for this movie, you know, but, like, if you come across it.
People should see it.
Yeah, you gotta, yeah.
The last thing we did on the Watch the Throne podcast, which I think is a good thing to carry over, is just to feature another podcast on the network, even though these 2 hours, here's what we'll do. We'll feature the Tom Hanks podcast, Hanks for the Memories, hashtag HANX for the Memories. Go check that out. Alternating every other Friday with this show. So this episode comes out on January 4th. Next Friday, the 11th, we'll be doing a movie called He Knows You're Alone for Tom Hanks. And then
never seen
in
it.
2 weeks, what'd you say, you have seen it or have not seen it?
Never seen that one. I've seen a lot of Hanks, but didn't even know that existed until we started this. So
I think it's a slasher film, so I'm very excited for that. And then in 2 weeks, we'll be back here for Taps, a movie that I have not seen.
I've also not seen. I've seen a lot of Cruise, but that one never appealed to me when I was a kid. I wasn't into military boarding school movies, I guess.
Either episode 3 or 4 of this show, when The Outsiders, like, it's kind of his last where he's not the star, and then kind of from then on, you know, he's just the star of every movie. I mean, you can see here that, like, he's on screen for 48 seconds, but there is a burst of energy, and, like, his, like, weird little giggle, and, like, you can see that even though he doesn't have a lot of screen here, like, he brings an energy. Because this movie, I really enjoyed, but it's very slow. Very slow, like, I think intentionally so, but it's very slow for most of it. Like, everybody's just sort of, it reminds me a lot of, like, Cruel Intentions in that way. Well, I don't even know if I've seen Cruel Intentions, but it just feels like, to me, that's a movie where people are laying around on couches talking about things. And it's just, you know, another sex-charged movie. And I feel like here, it's a lot of, like, bursts of anger, and then just, like, lethargy. Just, like, people being lethargic. When Tom Cruise literally runs on screen, tells a story about almost setting his house on fire, it's this burst of energy, this life, that the rest of the movie did not have. And I think you can see, again, we're aided by the benefit of hindsight, that there's something, maybe not special, but something unique about him that people would be like, I don't know who that was, but we need to get him in more things.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, this movie was feeling endless to me. I was like, is this ever going to end? Like, it's just dragging. I mean, there's those crazy moments, but, like, it is slow. That is sort of to its detriment. But yes, crazy shit happens. And when Cruise shows up, it's that, like, thing when you just see someone and you can't really explain it. I mean, you know, people have tried to just call it, like, oh, you've got it, or star power, or whatever it is. But, like, I think we'll just call it, like you said, like, he's got this energy. It's kind of infectious, and it's just like, what is going on? What is this? What's happening here? I mean, like, it's gone so quickly, you just feel like you need more of it or something. Like, I just got a hit of something. I'm not sure what it was, but I hope I get to see that again in a movie one day or something like that. Like, there's just like instant sort of, lots of actors have it. And like, I don't know that they all bring it to their first performance, but, like, it's there, whatever. Like, with James Spader, I was like, he's fully formed. Like, Cruise feels like he knows what he wants to do and become, and it's coming across in 48 seconds, and that's crazy to me.
Yeah. So come back next Friday, different feed, Tom Hanks, Tom Tom Club, part 2, sort of, or part 1A, or whatever. And then in 2 weeks, come back here for Tom Cruise, Taps on Cruise Club. Hanks for the Memories, Cruise Club. We were off to a rocking start here, Mike. I thought, you know, I know that we're probably going to have stretches where I don't enjoy the movies. I don't think we're going to have ones that we suffer through, I think, for Keanu or Charlize. You know, there's runs like in Tom Hanks' career where it's like 9 years where he just made like 12 of like the greatest movies that have ever been made. Like, it's just, it's crazy. Like, there's so much good stuff to come. And I'm just so excited that, you know, we will see what next week's movie holds. But for Tom Cruise and Cruise Club to start off with such a weird kind of statement film in a way, I'm glad that we are already on this journey because it is wild.
Yeah, it couldn't have started any better if you ask me. Like, I was a little sort of like, oh, how's it going to go? But like, yeah, I'm ready, man. I'm so ready for this. Like, I was excited before, but now I'm like super duper excited. So yeah. This is going
to
be good.
So for all things Cruise Club, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us. run@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/cageclub. Get some merch, get some shout outs, whatever you want to do, just say hi to us either one of those two places, and we'll be back in 2 weeks right here on the show. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks with Taps right here on Cruise Club.
My love, there's only you in my life. The only thing that's right. My first love, your